Indiana Family Dentistry is located at 505 North Green Street in Brownsburg. Dr. Will Hine practices general and cosmetic dentistry with services ranging from veneers and whitening to implants and complete smile restorations. Indiana Family Dentistry's phone number is 852-5999 and website is infamilydentistry.com. Indiana Family Dentistry is a proud supporter of Hendricks County and Community Radio.
This is Donald James of Impact Youth Mentoring. Impact Youth is a not-for-profit mentoring organization providing mentoring services to the children of Hendricks County. We pair mentors ages 16 and older with youth in Hendricks County. Over the past 5 years, we have been able to impact over 120 children through our mentoring and tutoring programs. Information about becoming a mentor or finding a mentor for a child can be found at impactyouthmentoring.org or via email at impactyouth1010@gmail.com.
The UPS Store Brownsburg is located at 124 East Northfield Drive in Brownsburg. Their phone number is 858-1422. The UPS Store Brownsburg can handle your printing needs, including color, large format, and business cards. They also do blueprints, mailers, and invitations. Thanks to owner Tom Reese and all the folks at the UPS Store Brownsburg for supporting community radio in Hendricks County.
This is Central Indiana Today with your host, Rob Kendall.
Welcome in to another edition of Central Indiana Today here on 98.9 WIRZ. I'm Rob Kendall. Thanks for joining us on the program today. He's a writer, he's a comedian, he's a podcaster, he's a blogger. He's really a jack of all trades. His name is Greg Lenz. He's with the We Are Libertarians Media Empire. Greg, how are you?
Rob, it is a pleasure to be here. You are the sole person that invites me back after I appear for the first time on most shows. You're very brave.
So we love the We Are Libertarians. You are very nice to me. Your co-host is not. But
you guys have had some... Donald Trump has sort of broken up your relationship.
So we'll talk about this in just a second, but for those who may have just be hearing about you for the first time, because, you know, we're getting so popular that people are listening to the show all the time for the first time.
Yeah.
What is We Are Libertarians?
We Are Libertarians is a started as a political podcast in 2012, and what it was designed to do is be an irreverent form of meet the press from a libertarian perspective, because believe it or not, there are different blends of libertarianism, and since it's sort of the home for the politically homeless, you get a lot of interesting perspectives on a lot of different policies that aren't necessarily pure libertarianism.
Now, you do this with a guy named Chris Spangle.
Chris Spangle is the he's the brain trust.
Right.
He was the former executive director for the Libertarian Party of Indiana.
Now works for Bob and Tom.
Now works for Bob and Tom as their web director. And he was Rupert's, I want to say, he wasn't campaign manager, but he was number two in command.
He was body man.
Yeah.
He was the man who would have taken the bullet.
Right, right. for Rupert. And he's also, so he was a part of the highest number of Libertarian votes in the state of Indiana, and the reason that they have access to the debates.
Yeah, so we give Spangle a hard time.
You have to.
Yeah, but what you guys do now is you sort of branched out. You provide a lot of humor. You provide funny takes.
Yeah.
You hate all political parties, basically.
I don't. So I'm not the, I'm not disillusioned. I'm not disillusioned, whereas my co-host Chris Spangle, he is someone that the two major political parties have become the Antichrist to him.
Yeah.
He hates the Democrats, but he doesn't talk about his hatred for them as much. But for whatever reason, when he was kicked out of the Republican Party for not being against gay marriage, it just, you know, hell hath no fury like a Republican
scorned.
And
that was like a decade and a half ago.
Yeah, college Republicans at IUPUI.
Yeah, he's still got some issues he hasn't dealt with.
Oh, he hates Republicans.
Yeah, and but anyway, you guys, we love the We Are Libertarians. You guys do the podcast.
Podcast. We have articles and content. We have a daily news service now.
Which I get your emails every day
now. Do you get the links?
Because, of course, I get up very early to work, prepare for my show. Because doing this great show is very difficult.
It's very difficult. So it's 6:30 in the morning.
And I first thing in my email inbox is... email
the dispatch.
Chris Spangle. Yeah, the Chris Spangle email.
His face.
Yes, it's terrible.
You can't get away from him no matter how hard you try.
You guys now have a live show?
We do. So once a month, we do a live podcast from Morty's Comedy Joint up on 82nd Street in Indianapolis. And it's usually a two-hour show where we will have a string of our regular co-hosts up. And the emphasis is more comedy rather than commentary.
Yeah. So the reason we tell everybody all this is I feel like you were the perfect guy to come in and talk a little bit about the political landscape right now. The debate just happened because you're interesting because you're a big Donald Trump supporter.
I am.
But yet you're a libertarian.
I am.
And the best part about you, you qualify for this show because you're a Hendricks County native.
Yes, I had the great luxury of being born in the county that Rob Kendall made great again as the greatest tax cutter and prolific tax cutter in the history of Hendricks
County. You're a Plainfield guy.
Yeah, born and raised. I've loved my, you know, it's a community of values, and that's why I've always loved it.
That's great. Yes. Yeah, so let's start with the debate on Monday night. I was live tweeting for IndyStar.
You were. You were quite active.
Yes, I was. And I was very honored that IndyStar thought enough people care about
That's a big honor.
I was the number one tweeter.
Yeah. And now, Chris told me to remind you that he, 4 years ago, was invited.
Yeah. And
so you got sloppy seconds.
You know, it's 2000. You know, I told Chris it's 2008 or so, 2000 and late. it's 2016. I am the important one now, so anyway.
Look what you lost.
I from what I heard, because you can't really watch and tweet. It's a hard thing to do.
It's hard to offer insightful commentary in real time.
It is. It's very difficult. And I told somebody afterwards, I said, this sounds pathetic and like I'm a total egomaniac, but I was really tired at the end of the live tweeting.
It is incredibly hard to really formulate an opinion quickly,
yeah,
then edit it down to 140 characters, yeah, and still be watching the debate and then reading what other people are saying too.
It, yeah, is, you've got exhausting to, and you've also got to do that hashtag star debate.
You do. Yeah. I mean, that's that, and that takes away from your characters.
It does, absolutely.
It's censorship.
I was robbed of my greatness. You know,
you were.
Now you will love this. Of all the tweets that I did, the one that got the most amount by far was the one I put at the end, which said, regardless of what political party, Lester Holt should be fired. Like,
yes,
that one is still getting retweeted.
He was terrible.
He was awful.
I know the left was saying that he didn't hold Trump accountable enough, but of the debate questions, I can only remember one that wasn't specifically to, I'm not going to say gotcha, but to, it was basically written by MSNBC producers. it's what it felt like to me. And the fact that he took an entire week off to prepare for that is sad.
Yeah, it is. And again, our guest is Greg Lenz from the We Are Libertarians Media Network. Is that what we call it now?
Wall Radio Network.
Wall Radio Network. That sounds like something
Spangle.
Well,
you used to be
with
on it.
Yeah, I used to. Years ago,
yeah,
the Rob Kendall show was on the original Wall Radio
then
Network.
Then you sprung board to stardom.
Yeah, I was. I went to work under Governor Pence for a year.
That's true. You were a crony.
I was a part of the problem.
You were rewarded for your loyalty, something you rail against now.
What I wanted to point out, too, before we get too far, one of the other things that you do that I think is very insightful because it's becoming a part of the political process is the memes.
Yeah, the internet memes.
You do the memes. You guys are meme kings.
You have to be. I mean, the meme is the new, I guess it's the new cartoon, I guess you could say. Like, it's the new form of a satirical political cartoon, and a lot of people still don't get it, especially the older generations, the boomers specifically, but the meme is the new insightful satirical cartoon.
Because I was asking Lee, our intern, because he's still in high school, and I was saying, do you guys do memes? And he said, yeah, you know, we get memes. So it's really a large spectrum of people now from our age to his age that do
it's
memes.
It's really how we communicate, and yeah, it's even better than just verbal communication and commentary because, you know, the picture adds to the context and really makes it a more rich experience.
Now, you guys are unique with We Are Libertarians because you meme each other.
We do. Well, so that was all part of the strategy for growth. Is I was my co-host was going through a divorce and he was a little bit down in the dumps, and we were very, it was very early on, and I was like, we really need to grow, and in order to grow, we need to have an over the top strong man for libertarianism, which is so counterintuitive because, you know, we don't believe in leaders. But I was a huge fan of the fake Steve Jobs blog. There was like a writer that used to pretend he was Steve Jobs and he referred to himself as Dear Leader. And so I sort of stole that and created this persona of Chris Spangle put on Kim Jong-un's face as Dear Leader of libertarianism, mandatory freedom.
Yeah, it's great. And it's becoming interesting because you guys, I saw in the Gary Johnson, like financial reports or whatever, that he spent like $30,000 on memes.
So that was, this is how libertarian that was. They actually planted that to create outrage because it wasn't true.
So it's not true.
It isn't true. It isn't true. I was asked to contribute memes to the Johnson campaign by a third party, and I specifically said no because everything I submitted was too harsh. it was too critical. It was, you know, too condemning. And I thought, are we going to ever get above 5% by just going around and saying how much we like everybody?
Well, and it's interesting because one of the things you learn if you're going to... And by the way, I mentioned this because your network is huge. You have thousands of people that are subscribed to your podcast. And
yeah, over time, each episode gets about 4,000 weekly listens.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, it's so, grown quite a bit.
But you guys are savage in the memes.
We are because we don't... Our tagline is all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. And it's the culture of the United States has coarsened. The internet and anonymity has made it a harder culture. It's made people, I guess, more desensitized to condemnations and really just core-cutting attacks. And there's a big portion of Donald Trump specifically benefited from this cultural phenomenon. He is the meme candidate. He really is. The alt-right has created a phenomenon where a cartoon frog got a guy elected the head of the Republican Party.
And, you know, one of the things about Trump is he knows and embraces that this meme culture is out there. Like, he's doing things because he knows it will get memed.
Yeah, I agree. He has so many what are called GIFs. If you've seen them before, they're basically just very short video clips or moving pictures that are sort of slow and wonky on the internet. And his facial expressions, I feel like, are the sole reason Jeb Bush's campaign evaporated. Every time he made a mocking, condescending expression, it was just comedy gold.
Yeah, I get our guest is Greg Lenz from the Wall. What do we call
Wall
it?
Radio Networks.
Wall Radio Networks. That's very. It's very easy to say. Okay, so the debate. Your thoughts on a broad scale.
Okay, so going in expecting like the greatest fight since Ali versus Frazier, I was a little bit disappointed. It was as subtle or as subdued as it was. It got towards the end, they both lost their composure, and you could tell they were kind of tired of being around each other.
Is that because they get bored?
I think it's because they genuinely dislike each other as much as any two candidates that have run against each other in a general election. Yeah. I think there's an utter hatred at the core for both of them and zero respect shared for either one of their ways they're going about it.
The one thing about doing the live tweeting is I didn't get to watch it. I got to hear it.
Yeah.
And listening to talk radio over the past couple of days, it sounds like the physical expressions of Clinton really turned a lot of people off, whereas Trump, it was the continual verbal swipes that he's famous for.
And, you know, he really wasn't that bad because I felt like he was on the defensive from the start. I mean, when you are hit with question after question that isn't actually relevant to both candidates, it's only specifically targeted to get you to, you know, clarify or force you to take a position that you have evolved on, I'll say. Trump was just backpedaling, but he did an incredible job. At the beginning, he was somber, he was focused, he was very serious. And I told everyone in the audience last night when we were at Morty's, you know, I don't think he won, like this wasn't a nail in the coffin.
Right.
But the momentum's clearly on his side, and I think for a lot of people in the United States that watched, and I think they only really watched early on, it was the first time they saw Donald Trump be as presidential as Donald Trump can be.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to really show up and reflect in about a 3-point bump in polls nationally.
It's interesting because, of course, after the debate, the spin starts on both sides. And, of course, the spin on the mainstream networks, which heavily leaned Clinton, was, well, Trump got angry and she was professional. But you look at these online polls, and normally online polls mean nothing because Ron Paul, of course, won all the online
polls. He's the king of the internet poll.
Yeah. He's still probably winning online polls somewhere.
A lot of Libertarian Party members would like that.
But Trump won all these online polls during the primary, and everybody kept telling me, oh, that doesn't matter. Those don't mean anything. And I kept saying, the online polls are mirroring almost the election process. Well, Trump won basically every online poll last night. So are we entering an era where the online poll, the snapshot poll, maybe does mean something?
I think it isn't as credible per se as the Real Clear Politics 5 national polling average, but it is a indicator and it does show momentum and it is a good quick snapshot in a limited time frame. Probably within the first 30 minutes would be my guess before all the internet warriors for the two competing sides can go and flood the vote counts.
Because he literally won every one, and I told somebody when we were leaving the Indy Star, I said, I'm not paying attention to Drudge because you know that one's going to go heavy for Trump, but I said, I'm paying attention to the mainstream ones that are liberal liberal networks, and he's winning time. He won CNBC. He's winning those. You throw Breitbart and Drudge out the door.
Yeah, you throw the heavily, heavily partisan side on your side out.
But he's winning those, and those readers and listeners and viewers are tend to be a more liberal audience or mainstream audience, whatever you want to call it.
And they have much smaller amount of traffic, which is better for controlling for a good sample size.
Yeah, so he's winning those. So that tells me that he did very well. The other thing was Luntz, I think, did does the dials.
Yeah, he does a lot of the rolling poll, the rolling polls.
Yeah, and Trump did very well in those. And I want to ask you this, because I've said this for a long time. People, your libertarian friends, who about 80% of the time, I'm not sure they know what's going on or how it's playing out in front of them.
When you say libertarian friends, there's two kinds of libertarians. There's Libertarian Party members. There's LPIN members. There's, I guess, three. And then there are people who identify as libertarian.
Right.
My experience has been people who just identify as libertarian and find libertarianism appealing are very rational and able to accept criticism and know what's going on in the world. As you get into the party apparatus, it becomes like any other entrenched party insider. Don't you dare criticize, or you might as well go vote for Hillary.
Yeah, and they continue, those folks continue to say, well, he's so unprofessional, no one would take him serious. I think that's part of the plan with Trump, is that when he comes out and he does stuff, there's really no criticism of it because it's Trump.
Yes, he had his own Comedy Central roast, I feel like, in order to get it all out of the way. What else can you say about the man? He had a Comedy Central roast with the most awful comedian, or I mean, devastatingly critical comedians on the planet, and they just crucified him.
Now, as someone who has met Donald Trump.
Yes, and who has been called very terrific.
Donald Trump told me I was very terrific. He said that he wished every interview could be just like mine. That really bothers a lot of your libertarian friends, by the way.
Oh, very much.
They're very upset. And it's so funny because I'll still get people that'll say, well, why didn't you ask him this substance question or that substance question? I thought, what fun would that have been?
Yeah, you are more commentator. Like, you do great interviews. Your show's wonderful.
Thank
you.
You do
a really good job of getting drawing out interesting insider opinion from people that are difficult to get it out of. However, you are still part commentator.
Yeah,
because you've been inside and you have experience.
Yeah.
And so Donald Trump was someone you backed before any other Republican in the state of Indiana, and you never laughed him off.
They're so nice to me now, all those other Republicans now. So nice.
You made the contrarian bet, and it paid off.
Yeah, they were so mean during the primary, like not talking to me, bad-mouthing.
You got blackballed by the Republican Party of
attacking
Indiana.
Me on fictitious Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
It was very nasty to me.
Even John Gregg's mustache, who has a Twitter account, didn't like it.
Everybody was so mean to me, and I was proven correct, as we always are.
Well, yeah. People just don't get it.
Yeah, they don't understand. You just hit the nail on the head, all bloviating and joking aside. They don't get it. It was so obvious from day one, because I've said this, and you get this too. Donald Trump is the candidate the Republican Party deserves because they've lied to the people for so long.
Yes, and there was never, I mean, Rand Paul, it's funny. There are a lot of comparisons between like a Rand Paul and a Donald Trump in that they're outsiders, but Rand is condescending and snarky know-it-all. Donald Trump is a populist, and he's someone who has a different perspective, and it's not like he has some reform initiative. He's going to come in and redefine conservatism. He's a restoration candidate. He has very few initiatives he's going to undertake, but he's going to almost get America back to where then it's a place where you can actually take a new path forward.
Yeah.
But until you get there, until certain things are restored, America isn't ready for an ideologue.
Get our guest is Greg Lenz of We Are Libertarians. By the way, Greg, where can people read your stuff, hear you?
WeareLibertarians.com. You can go there, or you can subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or through any of the podcast apps you use. We are readily available in there, especially when you search for libertarianism or politics.
And occasionally you hear me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I get assaulted by your friends.
I know. I hated I was sick because I was like, I want to be on there because I knew you were walking into a hornet's nest.
I was verbally assaulted on the last one.
You had my co-host as upset as I've seen him in 4 years.
Because we talked about amnesty, and we talked about...
You got memed.
Yeah.
Xenophobic warrior princess Rob Kendall.
Well, and it's so funny because libertarians are reaching a point now where it's the first time on a national level they've had some relevance. And they're experiencing... They're starting to take it personal because they have relevance. And it's like they have not yet learned you can't take politics personal.
Nope.
Even
there's no room for feels.
No, there's none.
You know.
So when I met Trump, and I told this to people ever since I met him, nothing he does is accidental. He is a brilliant guy. I met Trump the person, which was vastly different from Trump the character. I still have not revealed the magic thing Trump told me after our interview. When
I feel like now you're just leading this on.
I'm still going to hold that very close to my vest, and I will reveal it when the time is right. But I will tell you this, and I've said this several times, Trump off the microphone was every bit as nice and charming as Trump on the microphone,
yeah.
More so.
He'd be killed by now if he was like he is in the media all the time, because no one would be able to stand him.
Absolutely. And so Trump never does anything that he doesn't know what he's doing. And I early on in that debate, or I guess as it progressed, began to think to myself, what is he doing? And I suddenly realized he is throwing out this false theory that Republicans have had for the last couple election cycles, where we have to have this 50-state strategy. That is the most stupid, ridiculous...
I like to call it the love me strategy. Everybody has to love me in every state. We need some moderate, acceptable at cocktail parties and dinner table conversations. Like, well, you know, that Jeb Bush, he's just so moderate. He's so likable and so easy. You know, I could see myself supporting him, but then they go pull the trigger for the Democrat because they speak to higher aspirational things.
And let's face it, we are a country where the Republican Party is never again winning California.
Nope.
They're never again winning New York.
Nope.
But the Democrat Party at the same time is never winning Alabama. They're never winning Tennessee. They're probably not winning Texas as much as they'd like to.
Never.
So we're down to 10 to 12 states, and really we're probably down to 8 to 10 that make a difference every single time and decide the election. And let's face it, the path for Trump is Florida, Ohio, and then Pennsylvania, Michigan, or Virginia.
It's the industrial. He's rewriting the industrial Midwest, and it'll have the highest turnout of white male voters in the United States, or in modern U.S. electoral history, probably since Reagan in 84.
Yeah, so what he did last night is, and it's amazing, all these pundits, when I posted this, and then a bunch of people go, well, I never thought of that before. He was literally speaking to a very small swath of the country and a very small swath of voters in that very small swath of the country. And I thought from that perspective and that target audience, which is what will win him the election, he hit a home run.
It was knocked out of the park, because he understands that Donald Trump is never going to win an election by trying to be all things to all people. One, he can't. But two, he does what he does best. He is very good at framing the election in the terms of, listen, America isn't what it used to be, and a lot of people are upset about that, or that makes them nostalgic for the past. Those are my people. That's who I'm going to speak to, and they don't have to go and tell all their friends at church in the narthex after the service is out that they're going to vote for me, but on election day, they're going to know that they did.
Yeah, I thought it was a very well-done debate performance last night, because, again, Republicans for years now, really since Bush, when Bush first ran in 2000, have tried to do this broad swath of, well, Medicare Part D, and we're going to expand this, and we're going to do that.
Democrat light.
Exactly. And the 50-state strategy is stupid, because you're not getting 50 states. There are not 50 states in play the same way as there are not 50 states in play for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was very well done. I think he is going to – I think those online polls, while not scientific, are a snapshot of the anger out there and as
I think it's a discontent.
Yeah.
Early in the Republican Party, it's anger.
Yeah.
Because they're so sick of having vanilla candidates shoved down their throat that are acceptable.
Yeah.
And that's what materialized with him and moved people into the party for the first time. But in the general population, I think there's just a lot of people that say, yeah, okay, maybe our unemployment rate is going down, but it just doesn't feel like we're going in a good direction.
Because my thing with Trump has sort of shifted over time. In the beginning, I was sort of like, you don't realize this until it happens, but on a much smaller level, I was like the local Trump.
Yeah.
You know, before there was a Trump.
You were the flamethrower.
So I was really rooting for Trump just because it was sort of like a vindication of myself.
Yeah.
And then I shifted into a lot of people I didn't like in the Republican Party were against him, so I wanted to win so I could go nan,
that
nan,
made
nan,
it
nan,
fun.
Nan. Yeah, that made it even more fun. Then he won, and I was like, oh shoot, now we gotta get this guy elected because I don't want Clinton to be the president.
Yeah. But so, he's not dumb. Like, no, that was the false assumption of everyone.
Yeah.
They thought Trump could only be flamethrower. If that were the truth, he would have never been as successful as he has been in his life.
Yeah, the man is brilliant. You don't become a billionaire. Because he lost a lot of money.
He walked by a bum with Ivanka, and he pointed at a bum on the street in New York City and said, "That man is worth $90 million more dollars than I am." Like, and to come back from that in the New York public press when you played it up as the Playboy party boy that was higher than life, like Gordon Gekko, and to fail miserably like that, it takes like serious character to be willing to withstand that comeback.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Trump is he's so unapologetic about it. And I tweeted this last night. I like rich people. This is because I consider myself a poor person. A poor person, not super poor, but I'm not.
So
I'm not,
anyone in America really isn't poor. Like, we have homeless people with iPhones.
Yeah. You get what I'm saying, though. I'm not certainly not a rich guy, but I like rich people because rich people spend money on the radio station. Rich people stream sporting events. Rich people have advertising. They keep me eating.
There's a real danger culturally in America. Like, they always say the difference in the United States and England is when somebody drives by in a Ferrari in England, they say, oh, that guy shouldn't have that. In the United States, that guy sees him and goes, man, I can't wait till I have mine.
Yeah.
And it's been an aspirational thing to attain wealth and success. And it's happened in education as well. In a lot of countries, people look at people who go to like Harvard or whatever, and it's, a cake eater, he's a different member of society. And in the United States, it was always, I can't wait to send my kids there.
Right.
Instead, it's starting to be like we're belittling intelligence, and that should never be the way it is towards anything that's successful.
Okay, let's shift gears here in the time we have left. You like the Pence pick for vice president.
I like it was the right pick for Donald Trump. Yeah. And I don't have any issue with Mike Pence because I never worked for him like you did.
Yeah.
Like, he never did anything wrong to me. You know, so, and the RFRA debate is hypocritical a lot, especially because within the Libertarian Party, the idea that you can give people more religious freedom through a law and that isn't a good thing for libertarianism is pretty hypocritical, because at the end of the day, you've increased their ability to exercise a natural right, you know, something they shouldn't be condemned for. And so that's why I don't have the problem with Pence that a lot of libertarians have.
You know, my issue with Pence was, in a microcosm, look, and I've said this before, I'm not doing any endorsements this year other than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Bruce and I both have said no endorsements other than Donald Trump.
His outweighs yours.
Yes,
but
absolutely. If I ever run for office again, Bruce will be on the campaign poster, not me. But I said I'm not doing any endorsements other than Trump because I want to be able to provide objective commentary. But I really, really want Trump to win because there's no doubt that I endorsed Trump, that I was for Trump, all that sort of stuff. However, I just think I wanted to see someone that would nuke the Clintons with Trump.
Yeah.
I wanted to see someone who would have no qualms taking them down as Trump would, and I didn't think Pence would be that guy.
He doesn't need to be.
I wanted Gingrich.
You don't want Gingrich.
I liked Gingrich.
Gingrich was sitting there having an affair with the oncologist while his wife's dying of cancer, while at the same time talking about how horrible of a family values candidate Bill Clinton was having an affair.
Look, I'm not saying everything he did was great, but he's a great orator of how bad the Clintons are.
He's the best mind and probably one of the best innovative messengers in the Republican Party.
Now, think about this. On the eve that Trump was making his decision, Newt Gingrich goes on Fox News and compares him to a pirate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great.
He is. He's Captain Jack Sparrow. He's a little bit crazy, but he ends up winning because it's like he has some secret you don't know.
But the reaction from the Pence people is why I have some consternation with the Pence people.
It's personal.
You can't say, I think this guy's a better choice without getting vilified. You can't say, I really want this guy to win, and I don't think your guy's the best choice to help him win.
You don't think Pence was?
No. I think Gingrich was.
But so,
I would have totally picked Gingrich.
So for me, I looked at the dynamics of the race, and I'm not a big believer that I don't think there's anyone in America who is going to decide between Trump and Hillary. I think it's going to be, I'm not going to go to the polls or I'm going to go ahead and support somebody. So that means it's a turnout election. And you're also in a change election because people are just kind of discontent. And Trump is the default change candidate because Hillary Clinton's status quo. And given the dynamics of that and there not being many independents to sway minds, it's about getting conservatives out and it's about getting people that trust someone in the party who will toe the line. And no one is more disciplined and toes the line than Mike Pence.
Like, it's just so vanilla. Unnatural. It's so unnatural. And it's like, you endorsed another guy in the primary.
So?
But I mean, you endorsed another guy.
Hey, politicians, they lie all the time.
I don't know.
Rand Paul called him an orange-faced buffoon, didn't go to the convention, and still endorsed him. You know what I mean? Like, this, we shouldn't be surprised that our politicians lie and change their minds, even when it's for their fellow Republicans.
And again, it's not that you don't, you can say somebody's not the best choice and still think the guy's okay, but it's just the barrage of you're not 100% with us, so you're totally against us. And that really turns me off.
Does it?
It does.
I know. And it would be nice if it didn't work that way, but unfortunately, we aren't given that luxury in American politics. You have to just do what you have. Look at Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz and Trump were besties early on in the debates. And then all of a sudden, they hated each other's guts, and Ted said, vote your conscience.
But it turned out to be a good thing for me, because my dear friend who I worked for, Suzanne Crouch, is now in a very prime position.
You're set up well.
Hey, I am. As I was told the other night, I'm one of the best interviewers in the entire state.
By a guy who wouldn't even acknowledge your existence at the Indiana convention.
We've done so great the past several months, and it all started with that Field of Dream moments at the JW Marriott. Where I met, as you refer to him, the God Emperor.
The God Emperor himself.
Okay, so I want to close with this. Your buddy Bell, he's doing really well.
Rex is doing really well. Rex, I actually went to earlier today.
You were in the VIP.
Yeah, I was in the green room with his campaign manager, Jeremiah Morrill, who you know very well.
Were you giving advice?
I have written a lot of comebacks and barbs and messaging for how I would do it. Granted, Rex and I have different speech patterns, and he's a little more folksy, and I'm a little bit more of a flamethrower.
Yeah.
But I do think that I supported Rex early on, and I was, when there was a really contested race in the Libertarian Party of Indiana for the governor's race, I was willing to be the rabid dog that everyone could blame and say was a horrible person, because I knew that if it was going to come down to two guys not saying anything mean to each other, it was going to look like this governor's race where it's a dead heat.
Right.
And Rex is doing really well because Rex is an authentic person. He doesn't make promises he can't deliver on, and he doesn't talk in general platitudes. He says, this is what I would do as governor. This is how I believe a libertarian organization would look or administration would look. The other two guys, they start with how can we do it. I start with is it necessary.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, he's at 6%,
yeah,
which is much better than Rupert did.
I heard 8, but I don't know if that's true.
Maybe there's a new poll out. I know he came on the show and he went up 2 points.
Yeah.
And so,
you really are. You might not only be the grand poobah of the Indiana GOP, you might just be becoming the grand poobah of the LPIN. And they're going to hate you.
Well, and again, of course, Rex Bell, the Libertarian nominee for governor. I want to get your thoughts on the governor's race, because obviously he's running against John Gregg and Eric Holcomb. You were at this. Are they going to ever have a debate when people can see it? Because they're having it on Sunday mornings and now during the week in the morning.
They're having one at 7 p.m., but it's in Evansville, October 25th at USI. I know that's the one that's everyone can go to. But I think that a lot of it has been in order to reach, today was clearly about getting students involved and sort of getting over some of that cynicism of American politics.
Sure. So you get the VIP experience. You got to go to the green room.
I got to go into the green room purely because I have been on the list of attendees, but then I was able to grab index cards and bring them on the way there. But I really enjoyed it because, I don't have any hatred for Eric Holcomb. I don't see him as a bad guy, and I see him as someone that's a technocrat and very much a Mitch Daniels-style governing philosophy. Only what works and how can we make it more efficient and cheaper. Whereas I see John Gregg as the ultimate, he sits out on the patio at Cracker Barrel handing out Werther's Originals and then gets in his car and goes and eats sushi with his bundlers and caramel. I got to spend 40 minutes with his wife, though, and we had a great discussion about educational policy.
Does she know who you are?
We just started talking.
Okay.
And we had a deep policy wonk discussion for 40 minutes during the debate.
Because I think we've told the story before on the show, but again, we have so many new listeners now.
Yeah, so huge.
Yeah, we need to tell the story again. I asked Greg to be my special guest at the Indiana Hendricks County Republican Spring
Lincoln
Dinner.
Lincoln Day Dinner.
The Lincoln Day Dinner, where Governor Pence was the keynote speaker.
He was.
And a lot of people know you from internet. But
yeah, and then also, I was in, and I was once a Republican, too, and then Hendricks County, I love Hendricks County.
So I thought it'd be great. Greg would be my very special guest.
I was basically your coffee table book conversation piece.
And the stares from high-profile Republicans towards Greg.
Two specifically. One was a little bit more of a physical altercation with a Marine, and it was a shockingly weak push.
our favorite part of that was you guys were very animated memeing Todd Young during the Senate primary.
Well, I just thought it was unbelievable that people found Todd Young to be so compelling and authentic, and then that Marlon Stutzman wouldn't be. And Marlon, what I like about him is there's a little bit, he hides it well, but there's that flamethrower in him too, and he is the thorn in the side of everyone, and I love that about
him. And I love the fact that I introduced him to you and he actually thanked you for your work.
I like people that are willing to get dirty. Politics is as dirty a business as there is, and if you're afraid to, if you want to stay above the fray, go be a lobbyist.
Yeah.
Go play both sides.
Did you know there's By the way, we had Chaplain Matt Barnes on the day before you.
I saw that.
So we needed to.
I'm an ordained minister as well.
That's why I felt you guys would go well back to back. And I, as
the three of us.
Yeah, we could all do
stuff
together.
Let's start a church. The House of Trump.
So I felt like you would be the perfect person to balance Barnes out, you know, back to back. But I want to close with this. You know, I did the interview with Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You said there were some libertarians that were very concerned about my interview with Johnson.
No, they loved your interview.
Oh, it was good.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Okay.
You did a great job, and they loved it. It's just that you did such this great job promoting him and presenting him well,
yeah,
and said very favorable things about him, but then you gave honest criticisms.
Yeah.
Criticisms that are well known.
We call that a heel turn in the wrestling business.
I guess, but you know what, though? You weren't negative.
No. You pointed out truths. Sure, and this is the thing about Gary Johnson, and I've said this. I think he should be in the debate. I think he's a compelling national figure. I think he's interesting. I think he makes the political process better. I also think he's a crazy person who has radical views on key issues.
So it's different. He isn't an increment... Like, libertarians struggle because there are two kinds of libertarians. There are incremental libertarians and destination libertarians. When their messaging is focused on the end point, it sounds like a crazy person.
Yeah.
When their messaging is focused on incremental steps towards reform, they sound like reasonable centrists. He makes the mistake a lot of times of going to the destination that isn't politically achievable and seems so far out there and outside the bounds of acceptance that you're just like, well, I guess it's just Trump or Hillary, or stay home.
I'm really Jill Stein and Hillary Clinton away from having all four presidential candidates. Wouldn't that be magical?
I don't know that I couldn't sit in a room with Hillary Clinton.
You know, I could. I could do a great interview with Hillary Clinton because somebody asked me this the other day, and I said it. I said, I would find things to talk about that are non-political, just like I pretty much did with Trump and, for the most part, Gary Johnson, because they are human beings, and there's an interesting human...
I don't think Hillary is. Someone asked me last night, do you think she's ever hugged Chelsea? And I said, unless there was a press group around, I bet she hasn't. Like, she grew up with an alcoholic father who was very cold and distant to her, and it's made her so tough,
yeah,
and robotic, but she rejects her toughness.
Yeah.
She could be a Margaret Thatcher type iron lady figure,
mm-hmm, yeah,
but instead she tries to be soft and warm, and there is nothing soft and warm about that woman other than her bowel movements.
And with that... That'll wrap up a great edition of Central Indiana Today. Greg, again, if people are wanting to know more about the We Are Libertarians, how can they do that?
They can go to wearelibertarians.com or Facebook.com/WeAreLibertarians, or you can follow us on Twitter at @WeLibertarians.
And occasionally you will hear me, although I think your partner is getting ready to...
Oh, no, you are the heel we have needed for quite some time, and I am in... Just so excited about the next time we can talk about how beautiful the wall is going to be and watch Chris go apoplectic.
And Mexico's going to pay for it.
That's the best part. It's fiscally conservative.
It's really the only option.
I don't know why libertarians oppose something they don't have to pay for and they get to look at a beautiful national monument.
Hey, don't forget to miss any part of today's show. You can check out the podcast anytime you want by logging onto our website at wirz.org. Click the shows tab at the top of the page. Scroll down, find Central Indiana Today, and go back and listen anytime you want. Until next time, I'm Rob Kendall saying have yourself a great evening.
You've been listening to Central Indiana Today with your host, Rob Kendall.
The UPS Store Brownsburg is located at 124 East Northfield Drive in Brownsburg. Their phone number is 858-1422. The UPS Store Brownsburg can handle your printing needs, including color, large format, and business cards. They also do blueprints, mailers, and invitations. Thanks to owner Tom Reese and all the folks at the UPS Store Brownsburg for supporting community radio in Hendricks County.
This is Donald James of Impact Youth Mentoring. Impact Youth is a not-for-profit mentoring organization providing mentoring services to the children of Hendricks County. We pair mentors ages 16 and older with youth in Hendricks County. Over the past 5 years, we have been able to impact over 120 children through our mentoring and tutoring programs. Information about becoming a mentor or finding a mentor for a child can be found at impactyouthmentoring.org or via email at impactyouth1010@gmail.com.
Indiana Family Dentistry is located at 505 North Green Street in Brownsburg. Dr. Will Hine practices general and cosmetic dentistry with services ranging from veneers and whitening to implants and complete smile restorations. Indiana Family Dentistry's phone number is 852-5999 and website is infamilydentistry.com. Indiana Family Dentistry is a proud supporter of Hendricks County and Community Radio.